we would really like is to have Russia lift their embargo of all U.S. seafood products going into Russia.
Alaska's seafood industry wants to pressure Russia into reversing its U.S. seafood ban. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 22nd. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a common name elevates an unknown candidate on Election Day.
I appreciate voters, but they're not all necessarily versed on who's who.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
It's been 2 weeks since Russia banned imports of American food products into its country. Now Alaska's seafood industry is asking the U.S. government to strike back. Terry Schaff is the president of UNICE, one of 10 major processing companies that's lobbying to get Russian seafood kicked out of the United States.
Well, what we would really like is to have Russia lift their embargo of all U.S. seafood products going into Russia. And it seems like we can't just go and ask them to please do that. So one of the best ways to do it is to call for a ban, an embargo on all Russian product coming into the U.S.
They're hoping Alaska's congressional delegation and federal trade officials can make that happen. Russell Smith oversees international fisheries for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He couldn't say whether a ban is something they'd support.
NOAA has focused more on trying to provide our fishermen, our processors, with information about what is happening and trying to help them find other outlets for their product.
But getting clear information has been difficult ever since Russia stopped accepting food shipments from Western nations at the beginning of the month. The move was supposed to protest economic sanctions from the West, which have been piling up since Russian troops seized control of Crimea in the Ukraine. Even though Alaska's shore-based processing companies and even the Bering Sea crab fleet would support an embargo, the industry isn't totally united. Glenn Reed is the president of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
There's a concern and a desire to have support of interest in the EU and other places beyond our region. And absent that support, some people were less comfortable signing on. I think that's a general consistency, whether it's a group or an individual company.
Unless Russia changes course, the ban on Western food imports will last until next August. The scale of American seafood exports to Russia can vary from year to year, but in 2013, the market was valued at $83 million. Most of that is from sales of Alaskan salmon roe, followed by pollock. Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker has spent the week in Alaska talking with staffers in the various federal agencies she's in charge of, including the Economic Development Administration and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
Penny Pritzker has been a close friend to President Obama and his family since his law school days and a major campaign supporter and fundraiser. When Obama's second term came around, the commerce position open and economic recovery a priority, it's no surprise he turned to his Stanford MBA friend with a 27-year record as a business startup specialist.
He said to me, there are a couple things I would like you to do. Build a bridge with the business community, and then make sure the voice of the business community is heard in my administration and be part of my economic team. And then finally, be the chief commercial advocate for American business, both domestically and around the world. And I have to tell you, I feel like we're making a lot of progress on all those fronts.
Thursday morning found the Commerce Secretary in a closed-door meeting with business leaders at a downtown Anchorage Native Corporation office. Asked what they talked about, she said there were the usual pleas for more infrastructure investment and concerns about federal fishery policies. But she was also filled in on Alaska's status as an international air cargo hub and the importance of the visitor industry. And transportation security and customs checks are areas where she might be able to apply some influence on another cabinet member.
You've got about 2 million travelers a year now coming to Alaska. They'd like to see more travelers and more foreign travelers. And so they're quite interested in how do we improve the experience of someone who's arriving from a foreign country into the United States. And I expressed that, you know, the Secretary of the Homeland Security and I are working very closely to try and improve that experience. I think we can do national security and hospitality at the same time. And the Secretary of Homeland Security agrees, and the President has asked us to focus on that.
Pritzker talked about Arctic trade and wants to see the proposed Arctic deepwater port outside of Nome. With the head of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Undersecretary Kathy Sullivan, at her side, she met with staff at the National Weather Service and vowed to make sure the U.S. keeps up its weather satellite coverage. She said she's been impressed with their work.
Satellites, we have algorithms, we have all kinds of technical information that we're gathering as the National Weather Service, but we're also working with our customers to make sure we're filling in the gaps. And that, to me, is what we're trying to do to be a weather-ready nation all over the country. But obviously in Alaska, it really hits home. I mean, I'm very much struck by that.
Secretary Pritzker also vowed to put a priority on funding research into the cause of the decline of Chinook salmon runs in many Alaska river systems, which Sullivan was quick to explain would be done in consultation with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
We're working very hard, both in setting our research priorities and working hard with the Secretary's support to go forward and get the funding that we need to try to step up our efforts and do the work that we require here. It's not a simple solution. I think looking at all across the causal chain to the best degree we can is what we're trying very hard to do, and around the council table try to target those questions that are most pertinent to the decisions we need to make and provide the best possible information there as kind of a triage mechanism.
If that sounds like the NOAA scientist defending her boss, it's no coincidence. Staff loyalty to Penny Pritzker is evident, and it's consistent with the business background of an executive who walks her talk about workforce development and employee involvement being her passions. Evidently, something that deeply resonates with Sullivan, herself an overachiever, the first woman to do a spacewalk. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
The Matanuska Susitna Borough is appealing to top U.S. officials to resolve the borough's $12 million ferry debt. According to borough manager John Moosey, the borough assembly on Thursday directed him to enter into negotiations with federal officials over the resolution of the debt the borough owes the Federal Transit Administration. Moosey says that U.S. Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox was in Wasilla about a week ago and met privately with borough officials.
He opened the door for us to have that meeting and discussion with his staff on seeking a resolution to this matter.
The U.S. Navy built the $80 million ferry as a prototype, and the borough was given it free of charge, but with federal grant money restrictions attached. The borough failed to initiate ferry passenger service across Knik Arm from Port McKenzie to Anchorage, and now the FTA wants its money back. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a unique growing operation delivers fresh basil to a Juneau grocery store.
I tell them to you, the mushroom is easy to grow too. Try the mushroom, fresh mushroom from Juneau too. But they said we're working on it. They're working on it.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
Bill Walker was the first candidate to make an appearance at Anchorage's Election Central on Tuesday night. He strolled in with an entourage ready to cheer his bid as an independent gubernatorial challenger. And when the votes were tallied, the Walker name did come out on top, only it was for the Libertarian nomination for the U.S. Senate race. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports the victory of an unknown by the name of Tom Walker has puzzled the Libertarian Party.
The Libertarian Senate primary was supposed to be a race between two former party chairs, conservative Mark Fish and the more liberal-leaning Scott Kohlhaas. And then there was candidate Tom Walker. Walker had been a registered Republican until this spring. He hadn't campaigned or raised any money. But Walker got 2,600 votes, more than Fish and Kohlhaas combined.
When I walked into the convention center and saw that, I thought, wow, this is just crazy.
That's Michael Chambers, the chair of the Alaska Libertarian Party. He was pretty confused until he realized that Tom Walker shared a last name with Bill Walker, an independent candidate for governor who has spent more than $100,000 on signs and advertising.
I appreciate voters, but they're not all necessarily versed on who's who.
Because Bill Walker isn't affiliated with a party, he won't appear on the ballot until the November general election. But campaign manager Nancy Peterson knows some voters wanted to fill his name in this go-round.
We've actually had several calls from some of our supporters who said, hey, I forgot that Bill wasn't on the primary, and when I got to the voting booth, his name wasn't there, so I voted for the only Walker that was on the ballot.
Pollster Mark Hellenthal agrees that Bill Walker's name recognition probably rubbed off on Tom.
The ordinary general voting public aren't prepared to take a quiz on the people that they're going to vote for, and they can easily be confused.
Hellenthal points to another case of namesakes on this year's ballot, the two Dan Sullivans. He saw evidence in his polling that voters were mixing up the Senate candidate Sullivan with the lieutenant governor candidate Sullivan. And on the subject of Senate candidate Dan Sullivan, Hellenthal thinks Tom Walker's nomination may be welcome news to the campaign because Bill Walker has been courting voters outside the Republican Party. Hellenthal thinks the other Walker could end up pulling votes in the Senate race from incumbent Democrat Mark Begich.
He'll end up garnering some votes from just his name Walker, which may be more moderate or Democratic.
Libertarian Party Chair Michael Chambers believes the benefits of Tom Walker's candidacy to Republicans make the situation look like dirty tricks. Chambers suggests it's possible that Tom Walker is a plant, and he doesn't intend to support Walker at this time. Chambers has unsuccessfully reached out to Walker multiple times over the past 3 months.
And if he can't even answer simple inquiries like, where is he? Is he a real person? You know, how can I support a candidate that is a Manchurian candidate?
Tom Walker did not return APRN's messages either. A source close to Walker says he's off the grid, on a float trip through the Brooks Range. He adds that Walker was the first Libertarian candidate to file paperwork and decided to run because no one else had put their name in at that point. Officials with the Alaska Republican Party deny any involvement. Chair Peter Goldberg says he's never even heard of Tom Walker.
At this point, I haven't paid squat attention to the Libertarians.
The runner-up candidates are taking the shakeup in stride. Mark Fish says the loss to Walker was disappointing, but he would still be interested in the party's nomination if Tom Walker returns from his float trip and agrees to step down before the September 2nd candidate substitution deadline.
It's up to the Libertarian board to choose its replacement, and if they wanted to choose me, I think it's a natural choice as the next guy in the vote count.
Scott Kohlhaas has a different strategy. He's thinking of changing his name to Sullivan. In Anchorage, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
The NSTAR strike has lasted 2 weeks, and there's no end in sight. Local workers are picketing in front of NSTAR offices around Anchorage and around the Kenai Peninsula. They're having a dispute with the management over retirement benefits for both present and future workers. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
A couple dozen workers stand in front of the NSTAR Operations Center in Anchorage, holding signs and waving to passing cars. They aren't allowed to talk to the media and refer all questions to local 367 business manager Greg Walker. Walker says the 120 operating members are striking to protect their pensions. He explains that the company only wants to provide 401ks for new hires, and current employees are worried that they'll cut their pension plans next.
The pension plan is well-funded. They've gotten great returns on the pension plan investments, so it's not costing the company any money. And our position is that that defined benefit plan provides a well-rounded future for anybody that retires with NSTAR.
The union and the company had come to a tentative agreement on the issue earlier this month, but the operating workers voted it down and decided to strike. The clerical workers did not. Walker says the union has also filed charges against the natural gas company with the National Labor Relations Board. They allege the company hasn't provided accurate information about the pension plan, and they're discriminating against employees who filed actions against them under the National Labor Relations Act. NSTAR representatives declined to talk about the strike or the negotiations. The only comment on how the company is being affected comes from their automatic answering service.
Our NSTAR offices are temporarily closed to walk-in customers.
Meaning you'll have to pay your bill online or over the phone. Walker says the workers are in it for the long haul and haven't given up hope that the strike will be effective.
Members are as strong as ever. The community support is incredible, and we're going to continue the fight.
But he says they would all rather be back at work. Temporary hires from Michigan are currently filling their slots. Walker says the union members have agreed to return to work in the case of an emergency. Two left the picket line to help contain a gas leak last week. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Fairbanks City Hall now bears the name of a former employee who died after four decades of local government service. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the building that houses City of Fairbanks offices is now officially the Patrick B. Cole City Hall.
Pat Cole died last November at the age of 63 following heart transplant surgery. He worked for the City of Fairbanks for 30 years, plus another 10 at the North Star Borough. Cole long served as city chief of staff and was known statewide for his knowledge of government and respected for his work ethic, but his good nature singled him out, a quality Mayor John Eberhardt emphasized at a City Hall renaming ceremony.
Patrick was a colleague, he was a mentor, he was a friend to many of us. He had a wonderful personality and disposition. He was always optimistic, he always looked at the bright side. He was always very kind to people. I don't remember him ever saying a harsh word or being unduly critical of anybody, even when some of us were not so kind.
Eberhardt described Cole as a man of integrity whose death has left an emptiness at the city. Eberhardt unveiled a plaque above the front door of City Hall, renaming the building. Former City Mayor State Representative Steve Thompson presented a memoriam for Pat Cole passed by the legislature and added personal sentiment shared by many in the crowd.
What can I say? I love Pat Cole the same as everybody that met him did. He was an incredible human being, and I'd said it many times that he was the heart of the Golden Heart City.
Several members of Pat Cole's family were on hand for the sign unveiling, including brothers Dermot and Terrence. Terrence Cole reflected on the recognition his brother Pat earned, but never sought.
As much as Pat would have detested this sign, because he really would have hated it, it's a really wonderful sort of thing to do, and it's just beyond belief.
Terrence Cole said dedicating City Hall for his brother will keep his name forever present in the community. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Alexandra Gutierrez. This week on AK, basil. It's prime time for gardens in Alaska, and there are plenty of plants and veggies that thrive this far north. Basil, though, is not one of them. It needs more heat and sun, two things that are especially hard to find in the southeast rainforest of Juneau. But two local guys have figured out a unique way to bring basil to the masses. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
That's the sound of compost tea brewing.
The microbes in the compost will kind of wake up when you put them in the oxygenated water with the food sources.
And that's 30-year-old Trevor Kirchhoff, owner of Juno's indoor garden and hydroponic store, Get Growing.
And then they breed, and so you can get just insane microorganism populations, thousands of species, like billions of individuals, you know, in a teaspoon of liquid.
Besides compost tea, which Kirchhoff says will make any plant go berserk in a good way, Get Growing sells anything you might need for an indoor garden. But Kirchhoff's true passion isn't selling things. It's growing things, especially in water. After he opened the store in February 2013, he set up demonstration gardens and experimented with hydroponic and aquaponic systems.
And they just got bigger and took up too much of the store.
Aquaponics is a combination of hydroponics and aquaculture. Fish kept in a tank produce waste, which supplies nutrients for plants grown in a hydroponic system. In turn, the plants help break down the waste and purify the water, which goes back into the fish tank. As Kirchhoff's demo gardens took on lives of their own, his friend took notice.
My friend Greg was basically saying, like, you know, you could really sell these plants. What are you going to do with all these? And I said, I just want to grow the plants. You can sell the plants and see how that goes.
That was the beginning of Evergreens Herbs and Produce, a joint business between Kirchhoff and friend Greg Smith. In March, they sold their first harvest of live basil to a local grocery store. The herbs are sold as plants, with the roots still attached and a little water at the bottom of the package. They can last up to 2 weeks that way. Earlier this month, Kirchhoff doubled his existing 1,000-square-foot shop space and built a 6-bed indoor aquaponics garden that contains rows and rows of basil.
Mostly it's been Genovese basil. Back there, there's a little Thai basil.
The 4-by-8-foot beds sit on concrete blocks and are connected by an organized system of plastic tubing. The water flows from a 165-gallon tank holding 9 tilapia and about 100 goldfish. Despite how organized the warehouse looks, Kirchhoff claims they have no idea what they're doing. Smith says it's been a huge learning curve.
We know we're probably not going to get rich, but it's fun. We'll make a little money, and it's neat to be able to have a local product in town.
The duo started off selling about 75 plants a week. Now, with more space and the new system, they hope to deliver at least double that. Produce manager at Foodland IGA, Jonathan Cristobal, loves their live basil.
It's good. It smells good and it sells good. People like it.
Foodland first started selling live basil about 2 years ago. They got it from a company in the Seattle area.
They send us by air once a week. We're having a problem, you know, I mean, the quality issue too, and it costs much.
In May, Cristobal started getting live basil from Kirchhoff and Smith. He says that gives him more control over the freshness.
Every time I'm out, I text them, they'll show up.
Cristobal says Foodland would be very interested if Kirchhoff and Smith ever branch out.
I tell them, too, the mushroom is easy to grow, too. Try the mushroom, fresh mushroom from Juno, too. But they said we're working on it. They're working on it, you know. But the basil is good. They need to expand. We need more in Juno.
Kirchhoff says the 6 beds is just the beginning, and he has no idea where the business will go. If you mention marijuana to him, though, he may get a little sensitive. Since opening the hydroponic store, he says it's been obnoxious how many people ask him about it. He doesn't want people to think he's trying to capitalize on possible legalization.
This garden here, we're not growing basil in this system in the hopes that, you know, we can someday, like, grow marijuana in this system, because if we were ever going to grow pot, we would have to redo everything.
But Kirchhoff doesn't write off the idea either.
We're indoor gardeners, and we want to grow, you know, what's A, useful, and B, profitable. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the future.
For the time being, he's sticking to what's legal. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Chitna, a town of about 125 people on the Copper River.
Hi, my name is Judy Block. I'm the administrator of the Chitna Traditional Indian Village Council, and I'm also a community member in Chitna. The native village of Chitna is up on the mountain, and then at the base of the mountain is the community, the unincorporated community of Chitna, which is primarily non-native. Well, it's an unnamed mountain. As far as I know, I've never heard an Indian name for it, nor a non-native name for it. And it's a beautiful little community nestled in the mountain, the old riverbed, and then the Copper River runs past us, and we're on the banks of the Copper River. So everyone in the state converges on Chitna in the summertime to dip net or run fish wheels. And at one point, the dip net office sold 10,000 permits in one weekend. So we have this huge influx of people every summer, which we appreciate. You know, it's not that we hate tourists, but they need to be a little bit more respectful of us local residents, because I think when they're trespassing and just dumping their garbage anywhere, just going to the bathroom anywhere, letting their dogs run and shooting their guns anywhere, they're not just doing it anywhere. They're doing it in our yards, and they're endangering our local population. There really aren't any facilities here other than the community hall up in the village. We do have a year-round bar downtown, and pretty much that's it. You know, you just kind of make your fun where you can find it. We're all here for pretty much the same reason. You know, we want the peace, we want the seclusion and serenity. And though we may not socialize on a daily basis, if there's any kind of crisis or any kind of need, the entire community pulls together and deals with it.
Judy Block lives in Chitna. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your town on the show, send us an email at news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Lisa Fu, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez and Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson Project, proving energy lives here. And by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build, from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.